Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. We've had a couple of lapses in the show recently because of cancellations and whatnot. And with the holidays, it becomes a little difficult sometimes. But we have had some great shows. In fact, I have over 80 shows in the last year or so that are here that you can go back and listen to. Well, today I'm interviewing Dave Montalbano, or I should say Cinema Dave Montalbano, who is both a film critic and also an author of two books. And he's going to tell us a little bit about some of the movies of the year and more. So let me bring him on the line here. Okay, Dave, are you there?
There it is. Yeah.
Okay, great.
We had some technical adventures trying to get online.
Yeah, we had some technical issues trying to get the show going today, but everything worked out, and now I have Dave on the line. So, Dave, I want to start out with talking about some of the movies of 2013 and some of the hits that you think were really good movies that people should go out and go see, and let's start with that first.
Okay. It's been a mixed-up year. You know, a lot of the big titles, well-marketed movies did extremely well. And on the flip side, there was a bunch of movies that came out just, you know, came and went within a week or two. So there's a lot of disparity between box office success and good titles and stuff. I'm in the process right now. I'm still in the next 3 weeks or so getting ready to view some of the movies that I'm excited to see, like Saving Mr. Banks, American Hustle. Saving Mr. Banks is the movie with Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson about the making of Mary Poppins. I've heard some excellent word of mouth about that. And American Hustle is a David O. Russell movie, and he was a producer, director, writer of Silver Linings Playbook, which he is reuniting with Jennifer Lawrence from the Hunger Games movies. So, like I said, I'm in the next couple of weeks, I hope to start seeing some of these Academy Award-winning or Academy-nominated films ASAP. But like I said, it's been a mix-up, scary year of movies coming out. And I think the one thing that stands out to me was recently, I'd say the best Christmas movie to go out there and see right now is Frozen, which is based on Hans Christian Andersen. It's based on Hans Christian Andersen's The Snow Queen, which was a story he wrote late in life. And The Snow Queen is actually one of the villains. And this is something that MGM and Walt Disney have been working on for about 50 years or so. And it never just quite gelled. So back in the 50s, MGM made the Danny Kaye movie called The Hans Christian Andersen Story. And in the movie, which is a sweet little movie, they sing some of Hans Christian Andersen's famous tunes. Well, and the plan was then Disney was going to animate cartoons to go along with it, but that project never came to fruition. But Disney did get access to a lot of the Hans Christian Andersen public domain short stories. So 30 years ago, they had the animation renaissance when they did Little Mermaid and generated all those, you know, great songs that we still sing 30 years later, like Under the Sea and all sorts of them. But with Frozen, at least it was late 80s.
Oh my gosh.
So, wow. And that was when, in the early 80s, they were saying animation was dead, and then the Little Mermaid came out and said, you know, if you give them a good story, good plot, and some decent songs, you know, animation still lives. And now we're just going through a pure evolution of animation right now.
Speaking of animation, we might as well get this out of the way. I know you're a big Disney enthusiast, and you were just at Disney World. Is there anything new that people should know about at Disney World?
In terms of the park, they're pushing new technology left and right. Like I said, I just got back yesterday. And one of the things that they have this new thing called, it's the wristband, and I stayed at a Disney resort. So by staying at the Disney resort, they gave me this free wristband. And the thing is, you tap it against the kiosk, and it lets you into the parks and everything. The only problem was it didn't always work. You still have to rely on your card that you purchase for your parks and the wristband. And the wristband, you know, they say you can charge things to your card and everything. That the technology didn't work. And frankly, everyone in the parks are kind of like rolling their eyes going, oh, God, here comes a guy with a wristband again. But it was, for me, the highlight of it. Again, it wasn't the animation or the cartoons or the goofy stuff. It's the human element. I got there Tuesday night, and Sigourney Weaver was hosting the Candlelight Procession in Epcot and stunning the American side of the park. And it was gorgeous, just a very, you know, very human, Christian, all denominations welcome to celebrate some of the great music from classical eras in the last 500 years of music. And Sigourney Weaver, it was her last show, and she just started crying towards the end because she was like, I don't want to leave. I want to take every one of these people with me. They had the Disney chorus. They had high schools come in and sing chorus in the background. The band was phenomenal. Sigourney was dancing on stage. Very, very subtle, but it was a wonderful, wonderful evening. And then our guy who is a Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival honoree 2 years ago or last year, Dennis Haysbert was hosting the last couple of nights
at
Disney World.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Yeah, so that was his night. So, and Amy Grant's wrapping up the end of the year. Gary Sinise, another FLIF honoree, has hosted it practically on a yearly basis. So if you get a chance, it's one of those, you know, I prefer entertainment like that over some of the cartoon rides and stuff, just because it was just very human and wonderful people.
That's more for an adult audience than the cartoon rides.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny, so, you don't think of Disney as adult, but there's a lot of things for adults to do that can, you know, be very entertaining. And so, going to see Broadway shows, but not paying Broadway bucks.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about Frozen. What other movies would you suggest that people go out and see?
Let's see. If you're able to catch it right now, there's a Robert Redford movie. It's a very simple plot called All is Lost. I hope it doesn't get lost in the Oscar hype because there's not a big PR machine behind, international PR machine behind this. But basically, it's a very simple story. Robert Redford is out on a sailboat in the Indian Ocean, and things go wrong. And that's what the whole plot is. And it's very much like...
Right?
No, you're correct. The only dialogue is he speaks some words in the very opening, but it's all just a visual motion picture of just simple things, of just him trying to keep his ship afloat with storms coming in and it's leaking and with an ending that just demands discussion right when it's over. But I really do hope that film does fly because, it's very much like a low-budgeted Gravity with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, which again is an excellent film, but and it's about the same running time, but it feels, both films feel a lot longer, but in a good sense, not that it's drawn out. It just feels like when you're through with both of those movies, you feel like you've been through an epic journey, and I'd strongly recommend it because both films are very similar, but both, you know, one takes place in the sea and one place takes place in outer space, but both will hold your interest.
How do you think Captain Phillips is going to do as far as awards?
I think it will do well because of Tom Hanks' connection. It will be interesting how Tom Hanks, with Saving Mr. Banks, you know, does against Captain Phillips. Again, he is it's the best acting that he's done in at least 5 years or so. And he just, you know, he knows how to play a heroic victim extremely well. The man is doing everything right to save his crew and save himself. He does things that you do to survive. And yet the last couple of moments just really brings out a vulnerability to him that, you know, you thought you saw when he won the Oscar for Philadelphia. This goes even deeper than that, if you can believe that. And, I could see him getting nominated for Best Actor for that film and Best Supporting Actor probably for Mr. Banks, even though I haven't seen that film. But I'm just guessing Oscar hype.
Mm-hmm. What other movies have you seen recently?
Let's see. One thing that's it's on DVD now, and I'd recommend. I did not see in the theater, and I wish I did. Was The Great Gatsby? It really does take you. It's very much a modern day adaptation of what the world was like in 1920s. It's not going to replace the literary elements of the Robert Redford Mia Farrow version or the Alan Ladd version, but it's definitely something that really will probably sink in with the modern audiences. I mean, when you mix in Gershwin with Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know you're going to have a very unique experience. And I think it's probably I'm trying to, who's that director of that movie? I'm not a big fan of him.
It's Baz Luhrmann.
Baz Luhrmann, yeah. In terms of story, you know, it's his best narrative of all the movies he's had.
Yeah.
Usually with his previous movies, I've gotten bored. But it really did hold up. And, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio knows how to play his matinee idol, Clark Gable moments with vulnerability. And, you know, I'll give him credit. It's not going to be a best picture for or a best actor award. Well, it's more technical then, but it's still worth seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful visual.
Now,
there's a lot
so.
Of action films this year. You've got Pacific Rim, you've got Wolverine, you have Thor, Man of Steel. Was there any movie that, as far as an action film or a superhero film, that you think really stood out?
You know, you can't go wrong with Marvel, even though both Thor and Iron Man 3 had to be a bit of a step down compared to last year's Avengers. But I did like Thor because it really had a comic book sensibility to it that I really missed, especially the ending when he's fighting the bad guys. And it goes into pure comic book mode in terms of humor, going after, you know, getting knocked into from one world into another. And also just like that, it was also just those little key moments that made it funny. Like, you know, after going to the dark world and saving his girlfriend and dealing with his brother, his half-brother Loki and everything, the first thing he does is he goes to a London flat and he's trying to follow the manners and the customs of the people in this London flat. They're all hanging up his jacket. Thor tenderly puts his hammer on the coat rack to make sure, you know, he blends in with the crowd. Big laughs every time I've seen that scene. And
there's
enough of those moments in that film to make it really genuine. And if I have to pick a Marvel film for this year, I'd definitely pick Thor over Iron Man 3. Even though Iron Man was filmed down here in South Florida, and we actually see some people that we know as extras in some of those movies in Iron Man 3. But Thor was just the most fun. And again, a great movie. Make sure you sit through the end credits. It opens up both the movies for the next 2 years during the end credits, but also a very cute closing gag at the end that I, you know, really loved. That was very fan-based.
Now, Percy Jackson's Sea of Monsters didn't do as well. Tell me about that film and what I know you talked about in your article in The Observer about how it took them a long time to go from the first movie to the next movie. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the problem with it was the kids aren't kids anymore. They're now young adults. And I think the beauty of the Harry Potter thing was they turned out the first couple 1 year after another, and they won over people with the technical ability of those films, so that when Harry, Hermione, and Ron were too old, you accepted it because we all grew up together. This case, they waited too long between Percy Jackson. What happened was then they just looked too old. And also, there was a big budget cutback, and a lot of the high-priced celebrities that they got the first time around, they didn't get this time. So it's kind of sad that when a franchise, you know, runs out of gas like that so soon, because I think it had a lot to offer, and I would like to see part three, but let's face it, you know, is Percy Jackson going to be in a wheelchair by that time, or, you know, or you know, are they going to, like, reboot the franchise and, you know, get, you know, the latest child actor from Disney to play in it. Who knows? It's hard to say.
And there's some big movies that happened this year that I don't know if you had a chance to see, like 12 Years as a Slave. Did you have a chance to see that film?
No, I have not. I've heard, again, excellent word of mouth. And that's like one of those movies I really have to pace myself to see, because I understand it starts off brutal and is brutal for 9/10 of the movie. And sometimes with movies like that, I just have to gauge myself to go see it. I can't, you know, go see it on a Friday night or a Saturday night and just be depressed all weekend.
And also, The Prisoners is another big film.
I'm sorry, which one?
The Prisoners was another talked about film this year.
I have not seen that. Again, I understand the performances are excellent in that. I have not seen that one. One movie I don't want to get forgotten about is Before Midnight. That's with Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy, and they make a movie every 9 years together with the same director, Art Linkletter. Well, I'm sorry, not Art Linkletter, but
Linkletter.
And basically it deals with these two characters that meet in Europe, and the first time they met was in the 90s, and they just spent, before sunset, the whole night together in Vienna. And basically it's just two people talking. And
Richard Linkletter, by the way.
Thank you very much for researching that for me. You know, Art Linkletter had a TV show back before I was born. So,
in fact, when I saw Linkletter, I was thinking, don't I know who that is? And that's funny, because I was thinking Art Linkletter when I first heard about that trilogy. And but it's Richard Linkletter. Just kind of like, it's not Hans Christian Andersen, by the way, it's Hans Christian Andersen. So I just want to clear that up too.
Okay. Well, it's funny because you know the name of Art Linkletter's TV show?
I forgot.
Kids Say the Darndest Things. Kids Say the Darndest Things.
Okay.
So I'll say Hans and you say Hans.
Potato, I say potato. Another film, I just want to move on. You know, Before Midnight, I know is a much talked about film too. The whole trilogy is. But Hunger Games has become a phenomenon. So I want to talk about Hunger Games. Tell me about that, and I think you had a chance to see that one.
Yeah, I saw it on the IMAX. And the six-story IMAX theater, no glasses for this one. Great continuation. It's funny because when you end it's a part of a trilogy, which, of course, Hollywood now, they don't do trilogies now. They'd make the third part of a trilogy in two parts. So when Hunger Games Mockingjay comes out, it's going to be Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2.
Really? Okay.
This one, Hunger Games Part 2 / Catching Fire, in the middle of the trilogy, it's kind of like The Empire Strikes Back. You take off where you last led off, and then you can't really conclude it, but you have to have a climax to the end of Part 2 to Catching Fire. And they did a good job with it. First, it starts off very slow, and they deal with the Orwellian world that Jennifer Lawrence and Josh Hutcherson live in. And it's very dark and very gloomy. And there's a lot of political exposition with it that you go, let's get on with the action adventure. But unlike Twilight, which, you know, dealt with actors who were saying vocabulary words they didn't understand, Lawrence and Hutchinson really do bring some conviction to it. And then when you start bringing in Woody Harrelson and Stanley Tucci, Toby Stevens into the film, it really does take on a lot more urgency. And in some cases, whereas the first Hunger Games movie dealt with some attention deficit disorder editing, especially during the big fight scene, this one keeps the action within the frame, and I love that. And you can see what happens. You can see the archery moves. There are some really thrilling moments in it. Christopher Plummer's daughter, Amanda Plummer, who was nominated for an Oscar about 30 years ago, she's in the thing, too, playing an eccentric character. And it really does grow on you. And the point is, the film ends with a cliffhanger, but, man, I really want to see what they do with the next Mockingjay.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of leads you into it.
Yes, very much so. But you won't be disappointed, even though it ends in a cliffhanger, you won't be disappointed with the final, with the action sequences once they begin. There's this famous short story called The Most Dangerous Game by Richard Connell, of which Fay Wray made a movie about it in 1935. Catching Fire, Hunger Games Part 2 has some elements of The Most Dangerous Game, and I strongly recommend it just for that element.
I think you're talking about Toby Jones.
Toby Jones, thank you again.
Okay.
See, that's one of my curses right now as a critic, is I'm discovering, now that I've seen as much as I have, names and titles
it all blends together.
Blend in with me right now, and I apologize to your audience, but I think it's a critic malady.
Well, besides being a critic, you're also an author, so I want to talk a little bit about, we have Adventures of Cinema Dave in the Florida Motion Picture World, which has a lot of your reviews, but it also has South Florida history. It has pictures of you and celebrities and me as well and different things. But we haven't really talked about the newest thing that you wrote, which is a fictional story. It's a novelette called Davy Jones and the Heart of Darkness. So I want to talk real briefly about how you came up with this, what the storyline is, and I'll just let you go with that.
Okay. It was one of I was fascinated by the Davy Jones character from the movies Pirates of the Caribbean, and both Dead Man's Chest and all at World's End. And what happened was, I wanted to figure out, like, how did this guy become what he was? Because on one hand, he was more of a monster than a villain. And I say the difference between the two is monsters become more of a victim of circumstance. Villains kind of create bad motivations for everyone. And I just felt like towards the end, he had a nobility that other characters didn't have in that series. And I thought, you know, the fact that it took four pretty celebrities to try to knock him off, they still couldn't do it. Gave him like a, you know, almost a King Kong kind of exit from the series. And I'm a big fan of King Kong on top of the Empire State Building. So during the Lenten season, I tried to write something every day, and I ended up writing this 26,000-word novella based on how did Davy Jones become the way that he was. And it basically came out to 28 chapters of a prologue and an epilogue, and it came out to about 99 pages or so, and I was like, it came out full throttle with very really minor editing of the character in the whole story, and it came full throttle. And then when I let it sit for a while and then looked at it again and started adding some, I saw certain themes happening with music, which involves the character, the mythical character of Orpheus, how Greek mythology intruded upon Davy Jones's life. And in doing the research on it, really discovered that Walt Disney, making the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, they created their own myth for Davy Jones. And this was something like there really wasn't much origin story with him. So I thought, well, let me go ahead and create an origin story for him and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. And it has a lot to do with betrayal. There's romance. There's, I wouldn't say sexuality, but kind of a, what would you call it?
I'd say more sensual than sexual.
Mm-hmm. But it really, you really take us back to, you're not quite sure what the time period is, but you can see the journey that he goes through, and it takes you back to that seafaring theme and his life in the pub and how he finds this mythical character that changes his life forever and, you know, in the underworld and all of this. It's really well done. It's, you know, I have to say, and I had a chance to illustrate the book as well. So that was a lot of fun to kind of go from what you had created and make a visual component to it. So,
I appreciate the work you did pull off on that, because I wanted something that kind of was artistic, but not, I wanted it as if a cabin boy was aboard the Flying Dutchman and was sketching out some of the things that he saw. And you picked that up, but you also added some depth to the characters. There's one of my favorite scenes where Davy Jones is staring down this character, and just the look in Davy Jones' eyes, like, you know, you schmuck, you know, that's, you know, you've really been the bane of my existence. And, you know, there's just certain characters with that that I really like that really enhanced the story a lot more. And the fact that you were able to take that story, move it over to do an art exhibit at Tate's book, Bear and Bird and Bear,
Bear
exhibit
Bird
this year. And, you know, start a painting series. I think it was Bird and Bear. They, you know, Bird can fly away, but the Bear's got to walk around. And, but the, you know, and I just love the fact that it's actually, you know, and I'd like to, I actually got to talk to some family who's very musically inclined, because I got an idea for something that I'd like to do with Davy Jones. I don't want to say it out loud online, but there's some follow-up with it that I'd like to see if somebody can just take it and go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, with your drawings, I just gave you some loose guidelines and said, figure it out. And like with Inferno, that was basically all you're doing. You know, I just gave you a couple of things and make it as crazy as you want. And
I basically created from a picture within the book that was based on the underworld and Inferno and kind of Dante's vision of it I threw in there. And I painted it, and I put it in this gallery, and it is called Bear and Bird Boutique and Gallery in Tate's Comic Book Store, which is in Coral Springs. It's actually Lauderhill. And,
now Boynton Beach, yeah.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. I was just going to say, he also has one in Boynton Beach, too, so let's say nice things about
Tate.
Well,
this one's in Lauderhill. Right. And I'm going to be putting another painting, which is completely unrelated there, for their next show as well.
Yep.
So it kind of got me on a painting journey, which is a little different.
Right.
But, I had a chance to do that. And then we went to the Miami Book Fair with the book. So it's kind of an introduction to a lot of people to not only that book but also Dave's other book. And I was able to sell my book as well, Basics of the Biz. So that was kind of an interesting journey doing that, an interesting adventure as well.
Yep. And then we also had Alan Darnay's book there, The Script, which sold.
Oh, that's right. I almost forgot. We had Alan Darnay's The Script, which is an excellent screenwriting book. If anybody is a screenwriter out there and is looking for a really easy-to-read book, I would definitely recommend Alan Darnay's The Script. And I've had Alan on this show as well. Now tell us how we can get Davy Jones. How is that and your other book available for people to buy it?
Personal appearances. matter of fact, I'm working on something right now. Again, I can't handle details right now, but I'm working on something with an organization right now where it might involve me and some friends. And might even have the grand finale of Sinister Simon, the curtain call for Sinister Simon. And
for those that don't know who Sinister Simon is, he's a puppet. And I'm not going to talk too much about Sinister Simon on here, but I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
Personal appearances, let's talk about how they can get it online, because I have a lot of audience that's international. So.
Right. But basically online, it's going to be, you can get both books through Amazon.com.
Uh-huh.
And just key in The Adventures of Cinema Dave. And you might actually get both titles now, both The Adventures of Cinema Dave in the Florida Motion Picture World and Davy Jones in the Heart of Darkness. You can look under my name. You can look under Rachel Galvin's name. One thing will link to another. You and I both have credits down on Amazon.com for your book, Making It in the Biz, and Davy Jones. So we're both up two and two right now. And Basics of the Biz.
Well, you beat me out. You have two books. I only have one. So I have to try to come up with something else so that I can match you on that department.
Look at it this way. We both have one and a half right now.
I guess so, because I illustrated it.
Davy Jones.
Yeah.
As soon as I start making some money on that, you're going to start making some money. But I figure in the long run.
You're involved. Okay. I want to make sure that we get in the Manhattan Project. I know you talked about that, and I know you want to give a plug to them. So tell us about that.
Well, Steve Hunter is a musician that's been around since for 40 years. We've heard him play guitar for 40 years on both pop radio, hard rock radio. I met him 2 years ago at the Alice Cooper concert, and he and his wife are just very down-to-earth, humble people. And Steve, it turned out to be the last time that Steve Hunter toured with Alice Cooper was at Seminole Hard Rock Casino. He says, I'm basically going to stay home and do some projects. And we ended up hitting it off through Facebook conversation, and he had this one project called the Manhattan Blues Project. And given my background with the blues organization here and creating a blues school, I thought through Kickstarter I got involved with it. And the beauty of his program was, and this is a lesson for people involving with Kickstarter or Indiegogo, he was only looking to raise $5,000. I mean, think about that, $5,000. He ended up raising over $13,000. Now, it's interesting because I'm getting offers now left and right to get involved with Kickstarter, and people are trying to raise, you know, they think it's going to be the Veronica Mars situation where they're going to raise millions. It's not going to work that way, folks.
Big thing that I tell people. Go low.
Yeah, go low because you'll achieve it. And the thing about it was the album came out, and I did not know this. And poor Steve Hunter was in and out of the hospital with heart issues and all that, and finally got it resolved. And then before he released the album, he mentioned some of the artists that was involved with the Manhattan Blues Project. Joe Satriani, Joe Perry from Aerosmith, and Captain Jack Sparrow himself, Johnny Depp. And it's an instrumental album. It's a fantastic album. It's available through CD Baby. It's also available through Amazon.com. So if you really need, you get free shipping with products of $35 or more. You get my books. You get Rachel's books. You get Manhattan Blues Project. Man, you got a great stocking stuffer for so many people out there right now. Steve Hunter, the Manhattan Blues Project. And trust me, the song is worth the price of admission, the Brooklyn Shuffle that he does with Satriani, Perry, and Johnny Depp. It's a fantastic, you know, my 90-year-old mom is tapping her feet to that one.
Yeah, I can't believe your mom's 90. Your mom's 90?
Well,
is that what
we'll,
you said?
We'll be in May. Yeah, she's going to be 90.
I was hustling
a little bit.
She doesn't look 90, that's for sure. 80.
Oh,
80.
I know.
The
funny thing was I was at the Disney thing Friday night, and they were celebrating this one lady's 85th birthday, and I looked over and was like, you're old enough to look like my grandmother, you know, compared to my mom, you know.
Yeah, your mom's young. But we need to wrap it up here. Is there anything last minute real quick that you want to throw out there about upcoming projects or what you're working on now?
Well, the top secret project involving Cinema Dave and Friends, when we know more, I'll release it through you in a PR and all that. I'm getting to be a regular inmate on Fright Asylum, featuring Woody Meckes and Manny Colin.
Let's throw out Fright Asylum, yes.
And matter of fact,
Before you continue, let me just tell him Fright Asylum, if you go on YouTube and you type in the Fright Asylum, he has a ton of YouTubes up there, and Dave has made an appearance several times. I'll say an appearance, not talking, but maybe a cameo. So you can see.
Well, I've actually talked in a couple of episodes, too, when we're talking about the best horror movies of all time.
I guess you have in the back, But
also, he's doing his Christmas episode, Fright Asylum Christmas episode next week. So if you can make arrangements, you might want to come to that one because it will be his special episodes are a lot of fun.
Okay. All right, Dave. Well, I think we're running out of time here, but thanks for coming on the show today. And
Well, thanks for having me. And like I said, love to do it again, or we'll make this our annual wrap-up end-of-the-year special.
Well, it seems to be. There's one from last year, so people can go back and listen to that one, too. All right. Well, thanks, Dave, and I will see you soon.
All right. See you then.
All right. Bye. Okay, well, that was a quick wrap-up, very casual style today with my friend Cinema Dave Montalbano, kind of talking about some of the movies that are going on that we mentioned. And there was a lot that he has not seen everything. You know, he's not a miracle worker, so he hasn't seen all of the films. And unfortunately, he's missed some good ones. Dallas Buyers Club, for example, is getting a lot of great press. So that's one that you should probably – I still haven't seen it yet, but I want to go see. There's, you know, fun movies like Anchorman that people are going to see from this year. then, of course, The Hobbit, The Wolf of Wall Street. I don't know how that film is. I've heard mixed reviews, I think, from the people that have. I think that it's out already. Looking at the list here of some of the films this year, the new Carrie, I know the DP from the original Carrie, and of course it's not the original to me. It's you know, a new revamp, and I think the original's superior, but Men of Steel, there's a lot of mixed reviews of that one as well. I'm just kind of looking at some of the films this year, but there's been some goodies this year. Personally, I haven't had a chance to see a lot of films this year, although I did see a lot at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, where I go every year. But I do agree with him on The Great Gatsby. I am not a Baz Luhrmann fan, and a lot of people would like to stone me for that, for saying that, because there's so much people that are so passionate about him. But I did enjoy The Great Gatsby. In fact, I think I saw it twice. So if you are a Baz Luhrmann fan and you haven't seen it, you definitely want to see it. And if you hate Baz Luhrmann, then you still might enjoy it. So I'm not going to go through all the films right now because we're running out of time. But I hope you enjoyed some of the banter back and forth with me and Cinema Dave. And I will hopefully be back next week. We've had, like I said in the beginning, it's been a little bit difficult with the holiday season to keep the show going this particular month. But we'll get on a good track again where I'm every single week, and I do plan to be here next week. But keep an eye out on my Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/IndieStreak, just like the show, and I will be announcing whether or not I will have a show. And also, please check out my other website, which is www.independentstreak.ning, N-I-N-G.com. Usually the format for the show is not quite as casual as this, and I usually have directors on the show primarily, although I do have screenwriters and other industry professionals on occasion, or some actors once in a while. But I have over 80 shows that you can go back and listen to the archives, and I do have some great people that are interested in coming on the show that will be coming up soon that I'm very excited about, so you do want to stay tuned. And if you are a filmmaker out there who would like to be on the show, please feel free to contact me. My email address is ravenprods, RAVENPRODS, @yahoo.com. And I'm glad that I was able to have a show today because, boy, I had technical problems, I have to say, up until 2 minutes before the show began. And, you know, that happens a lot in this industry where you never know what's going to happen. So you just kind of have to roll with the punches. So I'm glad everything came together. And I will hopefully see you guys next week or talk to you next week. And in the meantime, listen to those archives, okay? Happy holidays to everyone, and I will talk to you later. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.